Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 1:32 p.m. We are in Belts, room 105. The Thomas Stewart Building in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Wednesday, January 28, 2026. Members present are Senator Dunbar, Senator Merrick, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Yunt, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome everyone to Senate Labor and Commerce. I'd like to remind everyone to please turn off or silence your cell phones and join with me in extending a warm Senate Labor and Commerce welcome to our recording secretary, Carrie Tupo, and our LAO moderator, Doug Bridges. We have two items on our agenda today. First up is House Bill 78, Retirement Systems Defined Benefit Option, followed by Senate Bill 198, PERS, TERS Retirement and Medical Eligibility. First up is House Bill 78. This is our third hearing on this bill. Previously, we had a presentation of the bill. We adopted a committee substitute as a working document and took invited testimony. Today, it is my intention to take public testimony on the bill and set it aside for further consideration. This time, I would like to open public testimony on House Bill 78. How we will do House Bill public testimony, as we have not taken any public testimony yet this year, is what I like to do is rotate between in the room public testimony as well as online public testimony, making sure that people have equal opportunity to speak. Everyone will get 2 minutes to speak. After 2 minutes have expired, I will let you know that 2 minutes have indeed expired and that you should wrap up your testimony. And if you don't wrap up within about 15 seconds, I will nod to Mr. Bridges over here, and he will transition to the next public testifier. Okay? All right. This time, I'll open public testimony on House Bill 78. Is there anyone in the room who is looking to testify today? Mr. Andreasen.
Thank you. For the record, Nils Andreasen, I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League. If by 2 minutes you meant 2 pages, I've got that. I'll do my best, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today. HB 78 has a direct and significant impact on local governments who, as employers, are a minority within PERS but bear the consequences of the state's decision-making. This means that for the promise and potential of strengthened recruitment and retention, our members also feel the weight of net pension liability. Mm-hmm. That accrues when the state doesn't get it right, and a high actuarial rate that limits other kinds of investments that they might make in employees. Yes, the state carries the burden beyond 22%, a compromise that acknowledged that local governments had no control for the conditions that created the unfunded liability, but we often talk about how for many local governments they can't afford to stay in nor get out. With that in mind, AML would like to offer 3 ways in which this committee could alleviate the challenges that employers face and improve the condition in our communities. First, we would encourage you to remove the provision that establishes the 2008 salary floor. This anachronistic measure was intended to stabilize a system in free fall, but at this point leaves employers little flexibility to adjust their payroll based on circumstances that have changed in the last 18 years. The effect is that if an employer reduces their payroll below the 2008 number, they continue paying as if they were stuck in time. This would make much more sense as something like 75% of a rolling 3-year average. It allows the system to withstand shocks and for employers to adjust based on lost revenue, governmental efficiencies, etc. Second, there are many reasons for employers to become delinquent in payments, but for those who truly can't afford to remain in, the accrual of payments is considerable and for some insurmountable. Law currently requires these employers to be exited from the program, but this process somehow hasn't been as efficient or effective as it needs to be. Ultimately, what is needed is for a mechanism that moves quickly, that more quickly halts accrual, which means the employer stops collecting or being responsible for collecting and remitting soon enough that debt doesn't accrue beyond their means. It could be something like if an employer falls behind in more than 2 payrolls, it's required to pause participation in PERS until it can remedy the situation. For current delinquencies, they make up so little from a systems perspective that if you waived or the state assumed their liability, it would be better than letting it continue to grow. Finally, we understand that termination studies are well-intended from a systems perspective, but they're also a barrier to local decision-making, especially for small employers whose few employees are likely not going to affect the actuarial rate or net pension liability much at all. The state's actuaries could determine a threshold under which termination studies don't apply. You could give discretion to the department to exit employers who simply can't afford to remain nor leave at this point so that they can address their local circumstance without the burden of a liability that would otherwise continue for years to come, but without a corresponding public benefit. Thank you again to the bill sponsor for being willing to consider these issues along the way. To reiterate, we're willing to work with you to remove the salary floor, allow communities facing delinquency to exit the system, create an off-ramp that doesn't always require termination studies. I would also maybe close with commending the ARM board for recent decisions to accelerate and fulfill their obligation to address the net pension liability in a timely manner, and especially by 2039. Thank you to the committee. AML will continue to be a resource as you deliberate and this bill advances.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll go now online to Joelle Hall.
Good afternoon, Chair Berkman and members of the committee. Thank you for taking public testimony today. Very sorry I can't be there in person. I was planning on it, I was looking forward to it, but maybe later on in the session. I came to the Alaska Belt in 2006, and my first session was 2007. I've been involved in the Alaska Public Pension Coalition for over 20 years. And in those 20 years, we worked to address what we believe is a catastrophic decision made in 2005 to close our defined benefit pension. In the early days, we talked mostly about what we thought might happen as a result of the closure. We talked about poor retention, lack of competitiveness, and the slow degradation of the number of people who were looking at the state of Alaska, our university, our public schools, and our municipalities as good jobs where you could spend a career and do good work for your community. Well, no one on this committee was in the legislature that at that time. You know the story, because sadly what we worried about has come true. And it falls to this generation of lawmakers to see their way to a solution out of the predicament we envisaged so many years ago. I'm going to cut this a little shorter because I have less time than I thought. We believe that solution in part is a new defined benefit system. As I mentioned before, we've tried many other systems that members have come up with to solve the problems, but to no avail. We have rampant vacancies, a revolving door of workforce, and a pay and benefits that do not compete with other states or with the private sector. In short, we're losing this battle. Through the last 20 years, I've heard every rationale about why returning to a DB is unadvisable, but it all boils down to a risk. Opponents want the state to have a no-risk option. Well, that's what we have right now. The state bears no risk. The workers bear it all. And that doesn't work because the incentives are wrong. This system, in fact, is very risky. Last year, a minority member in House Finance stated on the record that, quote, a DB plan has fixed incentives for retention, unquote. We couldn't agree more. Moreover, these incentives are for the worker and for the state. The state's interest here is a functioning agencies that can carry out their duties assigned to them on budget and on time, and in so doing, avoid system failures, fines, and over budget pay incentives. We should encourage longevity to reduce turnovers and errors. The current system has been failing on all of those metrics. It's risky. AQPPC has worked to innovate and iterate and create a system that gets at this challenge. We've listened to legislators and experts in pensions from all across the country. What you see before you is a bill that is a distillation of the best practices and the best thinking about how you build a system for the 21st century. SB 78 is a shared risk model. Actions to increase all other forms of pay have not mitigated our problem. Legislatures before you have tried every other option. We have come here for decades telling you what our members want and need. SB 78 gives the state the flexibility it needs to make adjustments and to protect for future generations. It's time to take bold action.
Thank you for
it's
your
time
testimony.
To look at this modern. Thank you, Chair Berkman.
Thank you very much. We'll go now back to the room. Chris Murray. Chris Murray, if you'd take a seat at...
Last name's Heideman, sorry.
Oh. Thank you for joining us. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Chris Heideman. I'm a Juneau resident. I am a teacher at Juneau Douglas High School, Yadda-Atkakle. I'm a past president of the Juneau Education Association and a proud member of NEA Alaska. I'd like to start today by thanking you all for your service and an opportunity to testify today. I'm here again to urge you to support a return to a defined benefit system for all public service employees. As an educator, I'm going to speak from my perspective. As an educator and a classroom teacher, last year, while we were all talking about the debate to increase funding for public education, I continued to hear people over and over use the phrase recruitment and retention, and it was used as a reason to increase funding, and of course, it was one of the key reasons that we needed to do that. But I do believe a return to a defined benefit pension for TERS 3 and PERS 4 would be one of the most substantive things that this legislature could do to help retain teachers and educators in the classroom and in our school. As a TERS 3 member with almost 20 years of service time, according to my Empower account as of this morning, I am 23% on my way of my goal to have 60% of my average income in retirement. To reach my goal, I would have to work 44 years. I do not intend to work as a public school teacher for 44 years. If I retire at 30, I won't even be close. One of the solutions that I've heard put around to help solve the solution for TERS 3 teachers would be to allow us access to SBS as a replacement for Social Security. I would advise you against this as a plan as well. This would be a half measure at best for our new recruits, of which there are very few, and it would do absolutely nothing for people like me who have been in the system for almost 20 years and have already dedicated our careers to Alaska students. The first wave of TERS 3 and PERS 4 will begin retiring in about 5 years, and after that, there will be a large number of us entering retirement, and we will do so knowing that we will run out of money before most of us hit the end of our lives. Alaska is the only state that does not offer a defined benefit option for public service, and I would urge you to do your part to return us to a defined benefit. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll go back online to Zachary Christensen. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Zachary Christensen. I'm a managing director of the Pension Integrity Project at Reason Foundation. Reason Foundation is a nonprofit think tank, and we offer consulting and analysis on a variety of different policy areas, and my team in particular focuses on pensions. We offer up pro bono technical assistance, actuarial modeling, a lot of the technical assistance side of helping lawmakers and any other stakeholders. And we come from a particular perspective that's trying to establish valuable and attractive benefits for public workers, but also in a way that's sustainable and affordable without a lot of unexpected costs in the long term. House Bill 78 proposes reinstating a defined benefit, a DB pension plan for new public employees. The stated goal is to improve recruitment and retention, but it's important to evaluate whether this change addresses the workforce challenges you face and whether it does so in a way that's fiscally responsible and sustainable. Our actuarial modeling, I should mention, my team's put together actuarial modeling of Alaska's pension plans that helps give some context and a little bit of vision on the next 30 years of what that could look like with this policy applied. And under a best case scenario, HB 78 would cost Alaska an additional $1.4 billion over the next 30 years. Under a more, what you could call a more realistic or familiar scenario, if the investment returns over the next 30 years resemble something like Alaska has experienced over the last 23 years, that cost would increase significantly. It could be up to as much as $7 billion over the next 30 years. Of course, that outcome just depends significantly on the return that actually ends up happening over the next amount of time, and that's kind of a lot of the point of what we're trying to convey here. is that HB 78 would establish a significant level of risk that could be imposed on future generations and future employers that could be very challenging for the state budget to handle. Advocates of HB 78 often cite employee turnover as the rationale for moving back to a DB system. But we've looked at some data around the country, and we're familiar with a lot of other states and plans and what they're doing, and we've found that there's little to back up the idea that this would completely fix that. And in general, Alaska doesn't appear to be much of an outlier on that. Actually, we've looked at workforce data, and I have this analysis is available on our website, by the way, and you can take a look at it in more depth. But we found that Alaska actually retains public workers better than most states. In fact, from 2012 to 2023, Alaska had the 11th lowest state employee turnover rate in the country. And that's, of course, you know, despite the fact that they've had this DC system for around 20 years. During this period, Alaska's average annual turnover rate was about 13.6%, which is well below the national average of 18.7%.
Mr. Richardson, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
We'll go back to the room. Jane Andreen. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Jane Andreen. I live over in Douglas. I am an AARP volunteer, as you can see, but I am speaking from my own personal experience. I was really fortunate to retire 11 years and 28 days ago, but who's counting? When I came to work for the state in 1994, I came from Homer, Alaska, and almost my entire career had been in nonprofits. So when I came here in my late 30s, I had no retirement. My husband and I were both fortunate enough to be able to come in as Tier 2, which meant we have defined retirement. What I found in my 21 years of working for the state was that, and most of those in a supervisory capacity, is it became increasingly difficult to match salaries as well as have the benefits equivalent to what the private sector was providing, and also tribal health. I was working in public health in a non-clinical setting, so it was primary prevention of domestic violence and sexual assault. So, but I also know, because I work closely with public health nursing, that after the defined pension was removed, there was a real struggle for nurses to be able to stay or to be hired into and stay in their positions. It was just much easier to go to work for hospitals or doctor's offices or whatever. So based on that, I strongly encourage you to support HB 78. I think it's time for us to get back on board with some type of support for people. One of the things that I have found as in retirement that I think it's important to mention is we're staying in Alaska. We have the financial security to stay in Alaska, and as such are volunteering, working, living, playing, spending our money here in Alaska. And I think that's a big important part to recognize. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll go back online to Dominic Lozano. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Yeah, good afternoon. My name is Dominic Lozano. I am president of the Alaska Professional Firefighters and represent firefighters from across the state. I first testified on this topic back in 2005. And since then, I, along with countless others, have been working on this legislation to find a sustainable retirement system for Alaska's workforce. The creation of House Bill 78 was not a overnight decision. Years of research, modeling, tweaking, sitting down with legislators like yourselves, following the recommendations, have led us to the point where we are today. House Bill 78 does a number of things that retirement systems across the country have put in place. You know, we didn't recreate the wheel here. We went out and found best practices that other states use for successful systems. How did other states survive the 2008 crash? And we looked at all those systems and we put together this modeling and this legislation that we have in front of us to bring those best practices forward. I wanted to touch on a couple of those best practices really quickly and kind of highlight a few of them. One of them is minimum age requirements. Looking around the country, what other states were doing, and the importance, retirement systems weren't created to live 50, 60 years off of. So putting a minimum age requirement, while that might have upset some of my public safety members around the state, was a realization that retirement systems are based on that, just retirement. Also, one of the largest points that got Alaska in trouble was minimum contributions. Many states that have underfunded systems, when the markets have high returns, they took years off of making their minimum payments. However, when the markets were bad and bad years, they didn't make extra payments. So this caused a significant deviancy in funding levels. So what we did in this plan is we created a minimum contribution. Employees have a contribution of 8%, employers a minimum contribution of 12%. I'll skip ahead. Again, I had much more to discuss on this on these topics, but we all know that payroll is the largest cost factor for employees. And this system was created with a sliding scale to be able to offset when markets are good and markets are bad for both employees and employers. A employer with a minimum of 12%, the current max of 22%, has the ability to save millions of dollars once the unfunded liability, the legacy plans go away. That money goes back to our municipalities, back to the state, for whatever reasons they need to use it. A lot of discussion about this legislation is about risk. The legacy plans place 100% of the risk on employers. The DC plan currently puts 100% of that risk on employees. This plan here, House Bill 78, is a shared risk plan.
Thank you for your testimony, Dominic. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll go back to the room now. Patrick Shepard.
He does want to testify.
Okay. Thank you for being here. Back online, Jennifer Schmitz.
Good afternoon, Chair Borkman and members of the Senate Labor Commerce Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House Bill 78. For the record, my name is Jennifer Schmitz, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, where I serve as the director of the Alaska Educator Retention and Recruitment Center. ARC is a statewide hub for recruitment and retention in Alaska, and my role is to support all school districts with educator recruitment and retention. From both data and direct experience with districts, I can say clearly, retention, not recruitment alone, is Alaska's biggest challenge, and retirement security is central to that issue. Research from the university shows that each time a district replaces a teacher, it costs more than $20,000. Anchorage estimates it's over $29,000 for each teacher. Most of that cost occurs after hiring through onboarding, mentoring, and lost instructional momentum. Alaska's turnover rate is also well above the national average, particularly in rural and remote communities where instability is felt most by our children across Alaska. This level of churn destabilizes schools, disrupts instruction, and negatively impacts student learning. Today, the ARC job board lists 729 educator openings statewide, many which remain unfilled. When districts cannot retain experienced educators, they are forced to cycle into a cycle of constant hiring and too often reliance on emergency certificates. The children in Alaska deserve better. They deserve the opportunity to have strong, prepared teachers from day one, not classrooms in constant transition. Last year, we surveyed school leaders across Alaska to ask why educators were leaving. The number one reason by a clear margin was lack of a defined benefit retirement. That's not surprising. We're the only state in the nation that doesn't offer one to new teachers. Since 06, educators here have been placed into a defined contribution plan and are not covered by Social Security. When educators reach mid-career and begin thinking seriously about long-term stability, many leave, and not because they don't love Alaska, because they can't afford to stay. I know this personally. My husband and I were both born and raised in Alaska. We spent nearly 30 years as educators here and raised our family in this state. We were able to make the commitment because we had confidence in our health care and retirement security. With that, without that, our story likely would have been different, like so many stories we hear today. House Bill 78 is about keeping experienced educators in classrooms. A defined benefit is not a perk, it's a proven retention tool. Investing in stability costs less than constant turnover and gives Alaska students the consistency they deserve. Thank you for your time, and we respectfully urge you to support House Bill 78.
Thank you very much, Ms. Schmitz. Is there anyone else in the room who would like to testify to this item? Yes, ma'am. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, sorry, I guess I should scoot in before I start talking. My name is Heidi Dragas. I'm the executive director of the Alaska State Employees Association. Prior to this position, I had a career as a labor attorney, and I served as commissioner of labor for Governor Bill Walker. Most importantly, I am a lifelong Alaskan, the daughter of two proud public servants, and I have witnessed firsthand the deterioration of our state workforce over the past 20 years. ASCA represents more than 8,000 employees in the general government unit. We are the beating heart of state service. Alaska has seen an unprecedented outmigration of workers for more than a decade. Growing up here, it was a point of pride to say you worked for the state of Alaska. Fast forward to the present, we struggle to recruit and retain workers, and it's taking a toll on those who remain. We are asking more of state employees than we have ever asked, and we're giving them less. Some employees that I hear from are doing the work of two and three and sometimes more employees. We are losing workers faster than we can replace them. And our wages and retirement system no longer attract and keep the workers the way that we're used to. I'm going to zip through this. The recruitment and retention crisis is costing us real dollars. The last 2 years, fines of over $16 million to the U.S. Department of Health due to the backlog in SNAP and Medicaid, the debacle with the annual STIP to the U.S. Department of Transportation, a crisis in payroll. We couldn't even pay our employees on time, and thousands of errors because of a lack of experience, because of the recruitment and retention problems in the payroll division. It's hard to overstate the toll recruitment and retention has taken on our existing workforce. When I began my tenure at ASCA 3 years ago, I learned quickly the state's response to dealing with the ongoing recruitment and retention crisis is with a patchwork of letters of agreements, exceptions to our collective bargaining agreements to address ongoing workforce needs. I've signed dozens of these agreements. These are incentive pay to retain workers, recruitment pay to entice workers, travel premiums, overtime pay that are paid to employees that are otherwise overtime exempt, millions and millions and millions of dollars. Letters of agreements are useful and necessary tools to address ongoing issues related to the workforce, but they are Band-Aids, and they should be used sparingly. Instead, these letters of agreements and contracting out state jobs have been the primary tools used to address the crisis. These tools are creating friction in our workforce. It's like playing whack-a-mole. You smack down one mole, and then you've got another one popping up because you have employees justifiably saying, hey, why are they getting a retention bonus? Why not me? We did negotiate a strong contract last year for our members, but our wages are still behind, and the increases suggested for most classifications by the long-delayed salary study, it's not clear that they're going to be implemented. Pensions for public service will return stability and predictability to our state workforce. Providing defined benefits is how the public sector competes with the private sector for the best and brightest workers. When surveyed, 89% of our members support a return to a defined benefit pension system. I believe it is possible for Alaska to be a premier place to live and work again, and one of the most important steps we can take is to provide pensions for public service. Alaskans deserve reliability and predictability in the delivery of public services.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll go next online to Willie Keppel. Before we get to you, Mr. Keppel, I would like to recognize a couple of other legislators that are in the room. Senator Kaufman and Rep. Kopp are here. They've been here since the beginning of the meeting. Mr. Keppel, please begin your testimony.
Yes, and thank you for your time. I'd like to have a little transparency on display here, and when I'm done talking, I'd like each member of the committee to go around the table and declare whether they've ever accepted campaign contributions from any of the state unions or their listed officials and officers. That's just for clarity. I'd like to take you back to 2006. I've lived in the bush, since 77. And I remember when Senator Hoffman was debating this very subject, 2006, and he declared, and it's on tape, that they couldn't keep teachers even with full-blown PERS and TERS. It wasn't working in 2006. It's not going to work now. I go to the, I live in Quinnahawk, 450 miles due west of Anchorage, no roads, and I talk to all the teachers that have ever come to this village in the last 11 years. Right now, we don't have teachers except one Native teacher that is in favor of defined benefits. What they want is a benefit package they can pack up and they can take with them. They have zero intentions of spending 5 years. If they do spend 5 years in the bush, it's a miracle. They want to be able to take their full benefits. They don't want handcuffs to the union. What they want is an increased defined contribution plan. They want higher wages, and they would like to be added back into Social Security. And so I would have to ask that the committee forego all this that we've been through so many times, because I look at this as nothing but minute campaign speeches for the upcoming elections. There's no money to pay for what you folks want to do with this bill. We all know it. The governor's just put out brand new taxes for all of us to sit and consider, and you folks are going to be considering them here before long, whether you like it or not. I guess you could table them, but that won't kill the discussion. And I would just have to say that if you want higher returns, I think you should change how you invest our permanent fund dividends or our permanent fund corpus. We should probably be moving to the S&P 500 or the Vanguard and do away with the less harm clause that's in the investment package already. We're spending $937 million last year just for services to maintain our permanent fund. We can do way better. Warren Buffett does way better, and I believe you can too. And if you up your money made through the stock market on these defined contribution plans, everybody comes out better. Plus, we're not looking down the road 20 years to where nobody has an idea of how much it's actually going to cost to maintain these accounts for medical. It's what got us into the $8 billion deficit we're in right now. I can tell you that the city of Bethel still owes millions of dollars.
Thank you for your testimony, Willie. Thank you
very
much. All right,
well, please, yep, thank you.
Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to direct Mr. Keppel to the website for the Alaska Public Offices Commission, where he can find all campaign expenditures and contributions for any elected official.
Is there anyone else in the room who wishes to testify? We'll stay online. Oh, I see a hand in the back. Please come forward. State your name and affiliation and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I was not down in the room early enough to sign up on the sheet, and I appreciate this chance. I'm Brett Huber. I'm the State Director for Americans for Prosperity. So thank you all for dealing with this issue and the issues you deal with generally. Thank you for your service. I had a great conversation with the sponsor of this legislation last week and believe that he wants to do his best to try to handle the recruitment and retention issues. And I believe that he thinks genuinely that this is a way to do so. From my organization's perspective, we line up with where reason's coming from and the actuarials that they've run, the potential that if you have poor returns, you could have additional future risk. It could be up to $7 billion. We're concerned about that from our organization side, but we still do understand you have a recruitment and retention issue. I hear some conversation in the building about the teachers that at the time that this was handled originally didn't have or chose not to, whichever it was, the opportunity for SBS. And I know there's some other legislation that's working through the process on that, and be happy to take a close look at that. I'm concerned that there are a number of young people entering the workforce now that aren't trying to be handcuffed to a position. My father grew up in the time where he worked 35 years, got his gold watch, and retired. I worked in a time where I've had multiple careers. Current people coming up are likely to have a lot of careers in that time. So I don't know that we can handcuff anybody to a career. So portability is a benefit for those folks. If you look at the private side, they can't fill jobs. They can't attract either. COVID changed the world for jobs, right? They changed the world for who's in the workforce, who's chosen to stay at home and raise kids. It's made a lot of differences. So we don't believe that the potential benefit of retention and recruitment is equivalent to the potential risk of the increased potential liability. So that's where we're coming from. I'm, again, happy to be involved in the discussion, happy to bring our position forward, and appreciate the opportunity to have my first chance to testify in this new role before you, Mr. Chairman, and this committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Huber. We'll go back online now to Ms. Jackie Hansen. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Jackie Hansen. I serve as the superintendent of Craig City School District. I have dedicated over 20 years of education to Alaska. I'm a longtime resident of Prince of Wales Island, and I personally built my home in Craig. My husband is a retired Alaskan teacher, and our two sons, now graduates, proudly received an Alaska public school education. I am here today to support House Bill 78, a bill that keeps teachers in our schools, strengthens our student success, and builds stronger communities. At Craig City School District, all of our Tier 1 teachers are retired, and the last of our Tier 2 teachers are now preparing to retire. That means our future depends heavily on Tier 3 teachers, and right now they have no pension option. Alaska is the only state in the nation that does not offer our teachers a defined benefit pension and does not provide Social Security coverage for most educators. This makes it much harder for districts like CCSD to retain experienced teachers, especially in our rural communities. Longevity matters. Teachers who stay build trust with families. They strengthen our school culture. They invest deeply in their students. House Bill 78 helps restore that security and sends a clear message that Alaska values its educators. For the sake of our students, our schools, and our communities, I urge you to support House Bill 78. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I'll bring it back to the room. Does anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 78 in the room? Seeing no one right now, we've got another opportunity in just a minute. We'll go back online to Ms. Marge Stone King.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman and senators of the committee. I'm Marge Stone King with AARP Alaska, where I serve as the advocacy director. Older Alaskans deserve to retire with independence, security, and dignity. And AARP is the largest nonprofit, nonpartisan organization representing the interests of Americans age 50 and over and their families. Financial security is a key component of our advocacy agenda. We at AARP strongly believe that all individuals have the right to be self-reliant and live with dignity in retirement. We further believe that Americans of all ages, including those in Alaska, are faced with a crisis where the goal of achieving an adequate and secure retirement is becoming increasingly difficult. It's not surprising that defined benefit pensions increase retirement security and therefore reduce reliance on social safety nets. In fact, according to a study by the National Institute on Retirement Security, older households without a pension are 9 times more likely to live in poverty. Without a modest lifetime retirement benefit, most of Alaska's valued public employees may come to more of Alaska's valued public employees may come to rely on public assistance. An environment our state does not want to enable for our teachers, our public safety professionals, and other public servants. Greater reliance on government subsidies increases costs for all and chips away at the ability to live with dignity and self-sufficiency in one's retirement years. Alaska's inability to offer our public employees a semblance of retirement security, the kind provided by a defined benefit pension, has put us at a significant disadvantage as compared to other states in recruiting and retaining a qualified workforce, and consequently hindered our ability to provide reliable public services, which is also impacting older Alaskans. AARP is happy to work with the legislature to achieve the end of a defined benefit pension plan, which is essential for providing retirement security to public employees and their families, and ensuring a quality, reliable public services for Alaskans and strengthening Alaska's future. To that end, we support HB 78. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Stone King. We'll give folks a chance in the room, as there are lots of people who haven't testified. If you'd like to do so, come forward. We'll stay online. Mr. Gordon Glazer. Mr. Glazer, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Gordon Glazer. I'm affiliated with AARP, AgeNet, the Anchorage Municipal Advisory Committee, and the past chair of the Alaska Commission on Aging. But I'm speaking for myself and speaking personally. I'm a long-term state employee. I live a modest life based on that defined benefits. And let me say, I've looked at the new program. It's a very modest program. It's not like the old one. You've heard a lot of testimony today from many good speakers. Some were facts, some more were fantasy. But it's clear that we have a problem. A workman is known by his tools. And the tools for state government are the employees. And bluntly, the tools are broken. When we cannot deliver direct services because we literally cannot hire the staff, and the staff that we hire we cannot retain, something is wrong with the system. Most of you are aware of this. This is the question of moving it forward in terms of getting it as fast. But there's a definite need for a defined benefit system. It worked for me. It worked for my wife. You all know thousands of people who are in the state and are living a decent life, not a great life. They're not driving around with lots of Porsches or flying their second or third plane. They're members of the community. I can tell you, as someone active in senior affairs, they are the backbone of our volunteer system. They are the caregivers for the children, and sometimes they're a sandwich generation, their grandparents. Again, I would encourage you to look at the numbers, look at the facts, talk to your neighbors. They have a kid in school, or they have a relative in the Pioneer Home, and see who's taking care of them, and see if they have how they're doing in terms of hiring and retaining staff. The defined benefit is a system. I encourage you to support it. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Glazer. We'll go next to Emily Moody. Ms. Moody, please state your name, affiliation for the record, and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Emily Moody. I'm calling from Cordova. I've been teaching for 15 years, and I am calling in strong support of HB 78 to return a defined benefit to public service employees. And I have to tell you guys this story. I was at a teacher conference in Denver, Colorado, just last month. Well, yeah, last month, beginning of December. And we were talking about exactly this issue of retention and recruitment. And I mentioned to a group of teachers, educators, not from Alaska, that in the state of Alaska, we do not have a defined benefit. And that teachers do not pay Social Security. And I just wish that I could have taken a picture of their faces, because the look on their faces was one of surprise and disgust. One of the women had to sit down. And then once they finally composed themselves, they looked at me and they said, why would anybody go and teach in the state of Alaska if there's no defined benefit and there's no Social Security and no safety net for educators? Why would anybody devote their life to that? And, you know, I just looked at them and I said, we don't. We can't. We have a horrible time trying to recruit teachers and an even harder time retaining them. I said, in the state of Alaska is a great place to come and learn how to be a good teacher. But if you want to be a professional, if you want to make a living, if you want to have any financial security, you have to leave the state. And that's exactly what happens. So I am calling from my classroom in Cordova to speak in the strongest terms about trying to pass this out of committee and doing whatever it takes to get it passed, because I believe in public education, and you simply cannot believe or say that you are a supporter of public education and be opposed to a defined benefit, because it is the only way that we are going to be able to get people to move here and get people to stay here. And beyond the recruitment and the retainment issue, it is just not fair to ask people to dedicate their life to this profession and then run the risk of ending up in poverty when they retire, which is what is going to happen to a lot of Tier 3 teachers. And I don't think the state of Alaska is prepared for that to happen, for people who have dedicated their life to this profession to end up running out of money in retirement. The reality is every other state has been able to figure this out. So I just want to encourage this legislative body. I know that you do good work. I know that all of you are good meaning to figure out a way, for the love of God, to return the defined benefit to public service employees. Thank you so much. Please get this through. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Moody. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify on this item? I'll just keep asking in case you change your mind. We'll go back online to Sarah Seifert. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, so I'm Sarah Seifert. I'm here at the Fairbanks LIO with Erica Burr. I'm going to turn it over to her so she can testify. If I need to push, you just talk. Just talk at normal volume. Can you hear me?
We can. Hey, thank you for just I'll pause your time, and I'm not keeping track. But as we go through this, we'll get a little bit better at taking public testimony. So I need to understand, and for the record, we need to understand who is providing testimony. So if you are the testifier, just state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, I'm Erica Burr. I'm a Fairbanks parent and educator, and I'm testifying in support of HB 78. Thank you for taking our testimony. Early in my career, I was skeptical of civil servants' pensions as a legislative priority, but increasingly over the past 15 years, teaching in Fairbanks High Schools and watching skilled 30-plus year educators retire and leave gaping holes in our programs, I've come to believe that a defined benefit is crucial for retaining and recruiting dedicated, qualified people who can protect, preserve, and nurture what we love about our state. I speak to you particularly about our dearest love and hope, our children. We must actively create an environment that prepares, retains, and supports the hardworking professionals who care for and educate our children. We have such a shortage of teachers that our district has had to look abroad to fill vacancies. As I learned while teaching in Senegal, West Africa, teaching in a community with different expectations and values is a huge challenge and takes much more patience and courage than teaching in your home culture. It takes a lot more to understand and meet student needs. It's hard to be effective. Our children deserve the best we can give them. An education, that is experience. We need teachers who make their careers in our communities every year, teaching and learning alongside our families, showing our kids they matter, and helping build the social and academic skills they need to contribute to our economy and communities. We need Alaskan teachers, and we need to keep well-qualified teachers who come from outside. Teachers are ready to show up every day to make the best of very difficult conditions. We can push through to a point. A good public education system cannot depend on martyrs and heroes. The work has to be rewarding and sustainable for typical, educated, caring humans. We have to feel like the work is valued and like we can afford to stay and pour ourselves into it for 30 plus years. The future is bright, but only if we align our spending with our values. We must invest now and continuously in people to build their careers, protecting and preserving our precious state resources, including our children, for sustainable yield, as our Constitution says we must. Please support efforts to reinstate defined contributions. I particularly like the way HB 78 does it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Burr. Is there anyone else in the room or online who would like to testify to HB 78 today? Hearing and seeing none at this time, I will close public testimony. Representative Kopp and staff. Welcome back, Representative Kopp. Thank you for joining us. Does anyone have any questions for Rep. Kopp? Rep. Kopp, one of the interesting things about this discussion seems to be actuarial analysis done by groups who support this legislation, actuarial analysis done by the neutral kind of fiduciary interest of the state, and then actuarial analysis may be done by this other group who seems to be against pensions for public employees. Can you tell the committee what do you think is behind the differences in those analyses and what those differences are to your knowledge?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Borkman. For the record, my name is Chuck Kopp, House Representative for District 10 and the bill facilitator for the House Finance Committee on House Bill 78. That is a great question, Chair Borkman. So it's the duty to the boss, so to speak, you know, to the employer. Duty to the employer, I think, is the direct answer to your question. So in the case of the Reason Foundation, they are not an actuarial firm. So any actuarial modeling they would do would be as a result of working with another entity that would be an actuary, but that is not expertise that they personally bring. And that foundation is controlled by financial services industries that make money off annuities, which there's no wrong per se in that at all. It's just that that's the motivation. You don't make money off employees in a pension system. You make money off employees in a 401k by selling them an insurance policy when they go to retire, saying, if you want a guaranteed stream of income for X number of dollars for X number of years, I'll sell you an insurance policy that does that. Those are entities that control groups like the Reason Foundation. The state's actuary, the actuary that works for the state, has one duty: to keep the state of Alaska out of pension liability trouble. And what they have testified is that this bill, in their 25-year modeling, does not show any potential, any realistic potential, to introduce new liability to the system. They have said that several times. They model for ups and downs in the markets, significant market corrections, taking into account the events like 2008. That's what the state's actuary is saying. The third actuary you mentioned would be for proponents. And you could certainly say that those that are under contract who support a view could in fact come back with a position to be supportive of the view, much like the Reason Foundation. So there are actuaries that have been on contract who certainly support a review of a return to the pension, and those that have been contracted with by Reason to look at stopping that from occurring. I would say that our actuarial voice that we can trust as a state are the people that stand to lose their jobs or get sued by the state, which we have shown we will do. We sued Mercer when they let us in the ditch, and they're very motivated to make sure that our liability scenario that we experienced in the early 2000s after bad advice from Mercer is never repeated. And our actuaries that work for us, that work for the state, are saying that this plan is nothing like the legacy pension, that the safeguards in it, because it reacts live to the market, make it highly unlikely that any new future liability will be introduced to the state in their modeling, and they testify to it very eloquently. So you heard from the reason earlier, they gave their range of future liability, that they see that is not supported by our own state actuary.
Thank you very much, Rep. Kopp. As we think about the overall state budget and cash flow from a year-to-year position, many people, including some here who testified today, are concerned about availability of cash to pay permanent fund dividends, as well as pave roads and fund schools and corrections and all the things that our state government does. On a year-to-year basis, with cash flow, as we look at this model compared to our current practice of letters of agreement, MOUs, overtime pay, if HB 78 were to become law, what effect, according to the actuarial analysis done by the state, really the neutral party to protect state finances, what effect would this bill have on the state's cash flow?
This bill would unquestionably be net revenue positive. That is based on the hard numbers of the cost per year to the state that the actuary says this will run, as compared to the cost of what we're doing now. We know this year in the fiscal year we're in, we're on track to exceed $200 million in premium pay. You heard Ms. Heidi Dreiges testify to some of the premium pay and letters of agreement issues. But our own administration has put together an exhaustive report of how that has increased from $80 million in FY20 to $149 million in FY25. And we're only halfway through FY26, and we're already way past $112 million. So it's going up on an exponential curve, and the drivers of that are vacancies, staffing shortages, call-outs, and people basically not getting days off. They're just working around the clock to keep the wheels on, whether it's your plow truck guys, DOT people, or your public safety people. That's what it takes, and that's what we're doing right now. So the just to recap, what our actuaries project is a cost in the $80 to $90 million a year range would be the total state investment in this plan. What we're paying now is in the several hundreds of millions of dollars a year, not only in the premium pay, but in the errors and omissions, the fines, the inability to have people to attract for and put in for reimbursements from federal grant programs that are in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And then finally, we are not recognizing any savings by reducing the churn because we're taking highly skilled operational people off the line, keeping them constantly in a training mode. And then to do the line job, you got to work them 16 hours a day because they're training for eight because the employee churn is not stopping. And we heard from the Department of Law just a few days ago in front of the finance subcommittee that their number one problem is they don't have any middle-level managers, attorneys to mentor the new ones. They got all kinds of prosecutors in that 2 to 3, 4 year range. And then they have some up close to 20 years, but they have a huge hollowing out of their agency that they're wrestling with because they can't keep them there. And we're seeing that in pretty much every agency in state government.
Thank you very much, Rep. Kopp. Other questions from committee members? Hearing and seeing none, thank you again. At this time, we will set House Bill 78 aside for further consideration at our next meeting on Friday. We'll take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill. Back on the record now. It's 2:34 p.m. here in Belt's Room 105, the Thomas Stewart Building. Up next on our agenda today is Senate Bill 198, PERS-TERS Retirement and Medical Eligibility. This is our first hearing on the bill. With us today to present the bill, we have the Honorable Senator James Kaufman and his staff, the Trustee Emma Torkelson. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please state your names for the record and begin your presentation of the bill.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, James Kaufman, Senate District F. And the bill before us today addresses two issues. With the medical benefits, our defined contribution employees receive when they retire. Our current system lacks an important element of flexibility, penalizing employees who have dedicated their career to public service. The specifics of this bill mirror the March 2025 recommendations of the Alaska Retirement Management Board. You'll find their two resolutions in your bill package. Specifically, this bill applies to public employees in PERS Tier 4 and teachers in TERS Tier 3 or TRS Tier 3. These are employees who were hired beginning July 2006. For some background, when an eligible defined contribution employee retires, they can access the retiree major medical insurance plan and health reimbursement arrangement, sometimes referred to as an HRA. To do so, current statute requires they work 30 years and or 25 years respectively if they are a peace officer or firefighter. Alternatively, if an employee reaches Medicare age after working for 10 years, they qualify for the benefits. The funds that support both the PERS and TERS defined contribution health care plans are overfunded. PERS is currently at 121% and TERS is at 136%. Based on recent actuarial analysis, the ARM board found that the years of service required could be reduced while keeping the funds overfunded. So, taking one of the options recommended by the ARM board, SB 198 reduces the years of service required by 5 years. Public employees and teachers would work for 25 years. Peace officers, firefighters work for 20 years to be eligible for health care benefits. Employee contributions are slightly increased, and the surplus more than covers the new liability, considering the current state of overfunding. In this way, we're able to improve our health care offer to defined contribution employees without jeopardizing the solvency of the funds. You can find the ARM Board's full actuarial analysis in the packet.
Senator Gray Jackson has a question.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. President. First, I want to thank you for bringing this forward because it certainly looks like it's an improvement for the current defined contribution plan. But I'll tell you, I'm really hopeful that the defined benefit plan will be returned. But in the meantime, my question to you is that given that the defined contribution plans are intended to accommodate nonlinear career paths, how does a requirement for continued service in the final year align with the original purpose of a defined contribution system? And I hope my question is clear.
I'm not sure I understand exactly what you're asking. The core of this bill is to basically remove a snag that keeps people from being able to have more flexibility getting in. So I'm not sure if you're asking about that flexibility element or amending the 12-month requirement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. The chairman's going to help with the question that I had. Thank you.
I think to further on the question, because I have a similar question, is if DC plans are designed to help people and if it is attractive for them to move to different careers, why was it necessary under the old plan that someone retire directly from the plan in order to receive a health benefit?
I can't speak to why they had that, but in this case, what we're trying to do is remove that 12-month requirement to provide that flexibility. That's kind of the heart of the bill.
Yep. Does that answer your question?
Thank you. Thank you.
Through the chair. And perhaps as we continue to discuss and present, we have another opportunity to be sure we answer your question or get back with you.
I appreciate that. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just to thank you, through the chair, to continue just a little bit. So SB 198 removes the 12-month requirement, and that change will give flexibility. Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped a beat here. So return a minute to the current statute to set this up. Current law requires defined contribution employees who have met their years of service to retire directly into the benefit plan. It further requires that they work for the 12 months immediately before they retire. The 12-month requirement imposes unnecessary rigidity. For instance, if somebody has met the requirements, but they can go do something else and not have to come back and arbitrarily work again for 12 months to get back into eligibility for the system. So if they're not ready to enroll in the retirement health plan, they're forced to delay retirement, leave, and then come back for that 12 months. There's no option for defined contribution employees to strategically defer taking their health benefits. And a little personal story with myself, I retired from BP. I was qualified for retiree medical. But I'm able to defer that. And so then when I was hired as a legislator, and we have AlaskaCare, so I'm able to do that. But still that retirement benefit is still there should I decide not to do this or should the voters decide. So I kind of have a personal understanding of the catch-22 that was here. So SB 198 removes the 12-month requirement. Change gives needed flexibility. So in closing, since no members have yet reached that 25 or 30-year eligibility threshold, we're at a good point in time in the system to make changes. SB 198 makes important improvements to the health care plan to better serve the employees who have dedicated their career. And my Chief of Staff, Emma Torkelson, is here to provide additional details in her sectional reading.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman. For the record, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Kaufman. So I'll take you through the sectional. It's a little repetitive, so I've kind of condensed it here. Hopefully it will be understandable. Sections 1 and 4 make changes to the retirement health benefit statutes for defined contribution teachers in Title 14 and public employees, including firefighters and peace officers in Title 39. They remove the requirement to retire directly into their health benefits after working the preceding 12 months. It also reduces the years of service required to qualify for these benefits. Teachers and public employees will qualify in 25 years, down from 30, and peace officers and firefighters will qualify after 20 years, down from 25. Note that if any defined contribution employee reaches retirement age after serving 10 years, they will still have to meet that 12-month requirement. Sections 2 and 5 amend the premium cost subsidies for Medicare-eligible retired teachers and public employees based on the changes in Sections 1 and 4. And then finally, Section 3 amends the HRA account procedures so that the defined contribution teachers and public employees returning to work after a gap will have the yearly interest, instead of inflation, credited to their existing HRA account. The ARM board will set that interest rate based on yearly market performance. And finally, the last section establishes an effective date of, I believe, July 1st, 2026. Yes, July 1st, 2026. I'll make a couple quick notes on sections 3 and 5, the subsidies for the healthcare premiums. When we were drafting this bill, these sections we thought were conforming changes to the reduction in the years of service. However, the ARM board intentionally did not recommend changes to those subsidies as they have an actuarial impact that was not studied. So in a future version of the bill, we'll actually ask if we can remove those based on the recommendations of the ARM board. Additionally, after we introduced this bill last session, the ARM board made a few further recommendations in resolutions for changes to this healthcare benefit system for defined contribution. We're still reviewing those recommendations, so we're not prepared to go into depth on them at this time, but we would like to work with committee members after the hearing to see if members would like to, if there's a desire to incorporate them in a future version of the bill. Thank you, Chair Bjorkman. That's all I have. We do have the chair of the ARM board online to answer questions about the resolutions, and we should have a couple folks from the Division of Retirement and Benefits who can answer questions about the health of the funds and any other questions you have about how the current system works. Thank you.
Ms. Torkelson, thank you very much. Are there any questions from committee members? Nice to just sit in the quiet for a minute, isn't it? I have a few questions. So, yes, I'm aware of additional recommendations made by the ARM board. Chair Williams, if you could outline those for the committee, if you would, and just talk about in the view of the ARM board, why is this change before us in Senate Bill 198? Beneficial as well as the other recommendations made more recently by the ARM board, and how do those recommendations work together to make things better?
Yes, this is Chair Bjorkman. Can you hear me okay?
5x5, sir.
Okay, excellent. Hi, I'm Bob Williams, Chair of the Alaska Retirement Management Board. And what I will say is that the board in 2025 tried to put a lot of committee time and some board time into thinking about what are our best recommendations for some improvements to the defined contribution retirement medical component. And those recommendations are 2025-01, 2025-02, 2025-21 and 2025-22. And so if you look at resolution 2025-02, one of the things we noticed is there's sort of really long requirement to get to the medical benefit. If you're a public employee or an educator, you need to have 30 years of service. And if you're police and fire, you have to have 25 years of service. And that's just a really long time, and so this we basically came up with a recommendation to reduce that. We had our actuarial look at it, review actuary look at it, and we kind of in that resolution 2025-02 we came up with three options. One was just make it 25 years for everyone, and that would still remain overfunded. Another option, which this one is make it 25 years for everyone, but make it 20 years for police and firefighters. That was still going to be, the funding was still going to be over 100%. And as was noted, the normal cost would increase slightly, but still it would be overfunded. We also had an option of making it 20 years for everyone. And 20 years for everyone had a cost to it that would have to be paid to keep it at 100% funded and then adjust normal cost. And with PERS, it was a little over $38 million. With TERS, it was a little over under $10 million. But it came to a little under $50 million to kind of keep everything 100% funded. What I heard from policymakers was that one doesn't have a chance because who has $60 million to pay for that. So our resolution 2025-21 looks for a funding mechanism through forfeited or highly likely to be forfeited HRA balances that could possibly pay for it. So that's that resolution. This bill, SB 198, is looking at that option where it's 20 years for police and firefighters and 25 years for everyone else. And that was one of the options we recommended to consider. And so I would say that they are complementary. Obviously you just want to do one of them, but if we wanted to go to 20 years for everyone, our resolution 2025-21 looks at a way to fund that. And if you just wanted the very simple way where it's already overfunded, this this bill, keeping it at 25 years for everyone and 20 years for police and fire, is already funded. The other comment I will make, I think there was a question earlier through the chair about why did they have a 12-month, prior employment requirement? Why did they have a requirement saying that if you had to retire directly from the plan? I do not understand everything that went into setting this up back in 2006 when I talked to the Division of Retirement and Benefits. I think there was a very strong focus on making things as tight as possible and ironclad as possible where there's absolutely no loophole. But I think after the passage of time, that requirement is kind of very rigid and arbitrary, and people need some flexibility deciding when they're retiring. And I'll just note that everyone that retires with a DC medical retirement, they have to pay 100% of the premiums and the costs until their retirement eligible age, which is currently 65, and then it's secondary to Medicare. So they're paying 100% of that premium. If we remove that 12-month requirement and if we reduce the years of service requirement, it will give people more flexibility with how they use their HRA account. Maybe they can retire at 62 and pay the premiums for 3 years from their HRA account and then pay the reduced premiums that are secondary to Medicare. But I think we want to give people flexibility, and we want to make sure that they end up with access to the benefits they need. But the last thing I will say is the ARM board is very careful and hesitant when we make legislative recommendations, and humble. We don't do it very often, and we try to think of things that if you gathered 100 people and you explained it, we could hopefully get 80 of them to agree that it made sense. And so we've been fairly careful and thoughtful in making these recommendations, but we do believe those resolutions would improve the system. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Williams. Are there any questions from committee members? I have one question. Maybe Mr. Murray or Mr. Roomsburg online with the Division of Retirement and Benefits could answer these questions. Mr. Murray or Mr. Roomsburg, could you please tell the committee and just provide us a little bit of education as to the state of fund balances within the retirement trusts and how you all feel about those fund balances being able to support these changes over time?
To the chair, Senator Bjorkman, this is Chris Murray, for the record, acting chief health official for the Alaska Division of Retirement and Benefits. We do have our CFO, Christopher Novell, online as well. He may be able to speak more specifically to the actual fund balances. What I can say is that the trust funds are overfunded at this time. But I believe that Christopher Novell would likely be better situated to speak to the specifics of your question, if that's okay.
Mr. Murray, thank you for that direction. Mr. Novell, if you've heard the discussion we just had with the question, if you could respond to that, please.
So for the record, this is Christopher Novell, Chief Financial Officer for the Division of Retirement and Benefits. Chief Officer on Chris Murray is perfectly correct. There is the health cuts, the health care funds are adequately funded for now, and they're projected to be well funded right through to 2039. So this is something that could be adequately carried with this bill. Does that answer the question?
Yes, very well. Thank you so much. Any further questions from committee members? Senator Kaufman, thank you very much. appreciate you bringing this bill forward. As we look at this, absolutely willing to consider and entertain additional recommendations from the issues brought forward by the retirement board. I'm happy to take a look at those as well. Certainly this policy, whether or not an additional policy on defined benefit goes forward, there will be a considerable amount of state employees that would still remain in the DC plan that would benefit from this change. So I believe appropriate that we consider this change, and it certainly doesn't conflict with the bill that we heard here during our first two-thirds of the hearing today. So I think I appreciate you bringing it forward. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. We will set this bill aside for consideration at a future meeting. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again tomorrow. I'm sorry, not tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, which would be Friday, where we will hear again House Bill 78, and we will have a hearing on Senate Bill 121, Health Insurance Allowable Charges. As there is no further business before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee today, we are adjourned at 2:55 p.m.